Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Climax, the new podcast brought to you by Angelica Malin and Rebecca Reed, all about sex and romance and intimacy in the modern age. This week, sadly, Bex isn't with me, so I will be hosting on my own, but I'm joined by some fantastic guests, including Alicia Grimshaw, deputy editor of About Time magazine, comedian Rosie Wilby, and we've got some surprise guests at the end who will be answering all of your questions. The show is kindly sponsored by Lilo. And don't forget to subscribe, rate and review. To The Climax. Thank you so much for joining me, my amazing guests, Rosie and Alicia. If you would like to introduce yourself, Rosie Wilby, who are you?
Yes, I'm Rosie Wilby. I'm a comedian and also the author of a book called Is Monogamy Dead?
Fantastic. Alicia, who are you?
Hello, Angelica. Fancy seeing you here. So I'm Alicia Grimshaw. And I work with Angelica About Time magazine.
Ah.
Yes, so I thought, well, I'll come along on this
and
one.
And I'm on a sabbatical from Tinder.
I see.
It's a true story. So, yeah, I thought, I'd come in, throw my hat into the romantic ring, as it were.
Sounds like you've been throwing your hat into a lot of rings.
Oh, Rosie!
As it were.
Yeah, I'm out of hats. I'm like a milliner. Is that what they call them? Who they make hats?
A milliner.
Maybe. So today's show is about romance and intimacy, how to create romance and intimacy.
Wow.
So Rosie, your book is called Is Monogamy Dead? Tell us about the book.
Okay, well,
and answer is monogamy dead, basically.
Well, no, you have to read the book. No, I don't believe it's dead. But I was starting to wonder if it was about 5 years ago when I decided to follow up one of my comedy shows called The Science of Sex, which had been really popular investigation into the psychology of love and attraction through humour, but also looking at some real science and the weird ways that the brain works in love. Freud even describes it as a temporary psychosis. And so I wanted to follow up that show with something else about love and relationships. And the idea of monogamy and fidelity had really come onto my horizon because I realized that I was a serial monogamist without really intending to be. But a lot of my relationships were ending maybe after 3 or 4 years. So I had this pattern and I noticed many, many other of my gay female friends had this similar pattern. And I kind of thought it was kind of a shame that so many relationships were ending. I mean, some of them were ending, you know, very consciously kind of doing the Gwyneth Paltrow conscious uncoupling thing, and we were remaining friends. But in some cases, there was some level of infidelity and affairs at the heart of why the relationships were ending. So I decided to do a survey asking what counts as cheating, because I realised that in some cases it was more nuanced than just sex. And there was kind of, as well as a physical arc of cheating, there was a more kind of emotional, intellectual arc of potential cheating, or whatever word you want to use. I mean, now it's sort of being dubbed micro cheating. These ideas like, you know, does text and email flirting with somebody count as an affair if you're not actually doing anything in the physical real world. It's very nuanced and ambiguous, but I guess you have to communicate with your partner. So all of this kind of opened up so much thought and exploration for me that I realised there was way more than you could really say in a 1 hour Edinburgh Fringe comedy show. And I started writing a lot more articles about it for various magazines, and I did a TEDx talk, and eventually the book came about. And really, my journey of talking to people in alternative types of relationships has taken me on a real journey through thinking, wondering whether I could be polyamorous and really enjoying some of the language in that community, particularly if you feel you've reached your threshold of partners, you can say you're polysaturated, which is a nice one. And eventually coming round to having a monogamous relationship, and I've been in that relationship now for, well, approaching 2 years, certainly kind of in that 18 months to 2 years phase, and we've moved in together and it's going really well. And I think the reason I've been able to sort of approach relationships more positively and consciously and in a more healthy way in terms of my communication has been because I've spoken to so many people who were opening up their relationships and realised just what level of communication and vulnerability they'd had to go to do that successfully. And I've kind of thought, well, actually, to do monogamy well, you need to do all the same things, really, and be just as compassionate and conscious and honest and truthful. So it really opened my eyes about how to do monogamy better than I had been before.
Interesting, rather than just being like, I'm a monogamous person, that's me done, that's all my self-exploration done.
I think you have to explore a lot to have a successful relationship, however you decide to do it.
Alicia, do you believe in the concept of the one? Do you think there's one person that's like out there for you?
Oh God, you've got in quite a deep question.
I know, I get told off for doing that. Apparently, that's not good form in podcasts, but we're there.
I mean, we're there now.
We are now.
I think there might be a couple. I don't know if there's the one obviously, yes, there's one person, but I think if it didn't work out with Dave, you know, James might be around the corner.
There's a couple of ones.
Yeah, I think there is. I think it's quite, to just kind of, you know, streamline it.
It's quite scary to think there's only one. I mean, I was asked to write an article for The Guardian called Have I Already Met My Soulmate? Because apparently it's one of the most frequently Googled questions.
Really?
Like, people wonder, you know, have I missed my chance? Am I with the right person now, the one? And I kind of think that's quite a damaging idea, because I think there are lots of ones. And I think it's really about a lot about the timing of where you're at in yourself when you meet that person, and if you begin that relationship in a healthy and conscious way, because there'll always be ups and downs and a bit of a roller coaster in any relationship.
That's the thing, is you might have
peaks and troughs. One of my friends said when she was getting dumped, her partner said to her, oh, I think our relationship is a series of dips and troughs. And she said, do you mean peaks and troughs? And her girlfriend said, no.
Because that's the thing, is you might have met the person that is the one, but you're not in the right place or the right state for that relationship at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Goodbye, Charlie.
I do think people, I don't, you know, when you watch a film as well, you know, when you watch I watched The Notebook last night. What a lovely Monday film at my house. I was like, should we watch The Notebook? I was like, sure. And I do think that you're kind of not programmed, but, you know, in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, is this the one? Am I looking out for the one? Where is the one? You know, is it hiding?
You're conditioned to think there's this one person.
Totally.
My best friend, we have a guy called Simon. He doesn't exist, but we are convinced that there is a man called Simon that she's going to meet at a music festival. And every time she goes to a music festival, I was like, well, Simon there. We kind of have an image of what he looks like. Yeah. And she is going to meet Simon eventually. So waiting for the right time. Do you think that romance has sort of died in the modern age? Do you think because of things like mobile apps and Tinder, do you think that romance doesn't really exist anymore?
I think it's a new kind of romance.
Like, it's booking dick someone picks. An Uber. Dick pics. Like, my boyfriend buys.
Is that romantic?
No, it's not. It's the most unromantic thing
ever.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
Like, no.
Yeah, dick pics are not the height of romance.
No, they're really not. A Wetherspoons breakfast, however. I do think, though, with technology, there are different ways of showing romance. You know, when people are like, I'll get you an Uber, I think that is quite romantic.
I see, yeah.
I also think that's romantic.
Yeah, I'll get you an Uber.
Yeah.
Sad though, we've lowered our standards so much that someone booking you a cab is romantic.
The standards are pretty low. But you know, that's what I mean. I think there's new ways to show romance. It's like you can book flowers on, you know, you'd have to go to the florist before, but now you can get flowers delivered.
Do you not think romance has just got a lot lazier then?
Yeah, because it's just quite easy now, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean...
Moonpig.
Yeah, I think it's nice when there's a bit of personal thought to something. So at least with something like Moonpig, you can personalise it.
Yes, that is good.
I mean, I'm still not sold that it's that romantic. I suppose if you personalised it. I think the most romantic thing my boyfriend's ever done is he bought me a Deliveroo. I got home and he was like, there's a Deliveroo
on the way.
You see,
that's romantic.
Bought me some Mackie rolls. Lovely.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
That is nice. I do, yeah, I think with technology, though, there are pros and cons to it. I think, you know, the whole... rise of the dating apps, and you strike a conversation with someone, the way in which they go about that conversation probably won't be the same conversation they would say if you were face to face in a bar.
Yes, in the old days,
in the IRL, you know.
Yeah, IRL.
Where have those days gone, Rosie? I don't know.
I know. I was a big fan of those days. I was very sceptical about meeting someone online, although I have my partner I'm with now. I did meet online, but I'm so surprised by that because I always made good friends on dating websites and apps, because I thought it matched people quite well in terms of hobbies and shared interests and stuff. But I kind of don't think you can really measure some of the weird intangibles of whether you're going to be attracted to somebody. That stuff isn't, you know, doesn't fit into those neat categories and boxes in quite the same way.
Because you can talk to someone for like a month on Tinder and then you meet them in the flesh and...
Well, it's not even some people don't even put the right photos up or whatever. I remember one website I was on years ago, it sent me my own profile back to me, but I was only a 73% match. Well, that's brilliant. I'm not even good enough for myself.
How do you match with yourself?
I don't know. We're all narcissists, aren't we?
There's a Jewish version of Tinder called J-Swipe, and everyone keeps matching with everyone's cousins, like with their own cousin, because there's not that many Jews on it. It's like, oh, I keep matching with my sister, you know, it's awful.
Oh my goodness.
Alicia, what's the most romantic thing that someone's ever done for you?
Oh gosh, well. romance. You see, I'm quite easily
impressed.
That's the word. Do you know what someone did? And honestly, I thought it was the most romantic thing ever. We had fish and chips on the seafront. I just loved it. We had fish and chips. I mean, didn't even eat fish. It was actually a battered sausage. That's not an innuendo. I don't eat fish. But we had a lovely time. And we had... you see, I just like the seaside, me. Went to the arcade. Had battered sausage and chips on Cleethorpes seafront.
Lovely.
That's romantic.
Yeah.
Also, some people have cooked me dinner before. Again, that's really nice.
Yeah, that's always a win.
I wouldn't say
if they can cook.
Yeah. I wouldn't say, like... You know when you go into... When you go away... And then you come back into the airport at Heathrow. I'm always, you know, wheeling my suitcase around, being like, come on!
Is anyone there?
No.
I did go and surprise my partner once.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I think that's sweet. I think dinner. I've had dinner and a bag of chips on Cleethorpes Seafront, which honestly, I think...
It sounds like fried food is the way to your heart.
Yeah, fried food. Yeah, and a Wetherspoons breakfast. Again, another one, which was delightful.
Rosie, what's the most romantic thing someone's done for you?
I think it's really tough because I'm trying to remember over the years, and it's, you know, I'm a bit older than you two and I've had so many relationships as a classic serial monogamist. But I think when people have travelled a long way to be with you, that can be really romantic. My partner, when I was at Edinburgh Fringe last year, which is always a nightmare for a performer, a stressful time when you can deal with a few hugs, she kind of drove up all the way to see me. So that was really nice. But I remember thinking about your fish and chips by the sea, which is so sweet. My first girlfriend used to sometimes like come and surprise me when briefly, I think we both worked in town, and she'd come and surprise me for our lunch hour with like champagne and strawberries in Soho Square or something, which was really nice and really sweet because, you know,
nice.
We probably neither of us had that much money then. And so, but I think, you know, I think we had probably not very expensive champagne, but it was kind of really
everyone loves cheap plonk.
Yes.
But that's the thing. I think with romance, you shouldn't measure romance on sort of the kind of big bravado stuff.
I have the sort of, oh, I'm whisking you off to Paris for the weekend, but that sometimes you feel like, oh, you know, I've got to do some big gesture back, and it's all like massive pressure, and it all escalates, and before you know it, you're buying each other, you know, crazy gifts, and it's just, it's too much.
Especially when you live with someone, like, I think the small things can become romantic. Like, someone, like, if he does the bins for me, that is romantic. Like, saving me having to do the bins or the washing up, you know?
Yes.
And on the flip side, what is the least romantic? So I'm talking, I mean, this is a sex podcast. We're meant to be talking about sex at this point. What is kind of the least romantic sexual encounter you've had, Al?
Probably my virginity.
What happened?
So it was year 11 and we all went to like camping, but it was one of those, it was like this weird field in the middle of nowhere, but, you tell your mum and dad, you know, you're staying at so-and-so's house, and actually you weren't, you just went camping. And everyone was just having sex, and I wasn't the last one in my friendship group, but I just thought, oh, bugger to it, I'm just gonna have sex. So I had sex with a boy, and it was awful. I mean, it was not awful, but you know, I'm on a ground.
Yeah,
you know, I wasn't even in a tent.
Really? It was just on the forest floor.
On the forest floor,
wild,
like Bear Grylls. Yeah. It was on the forest floor. I remember.
Oh my god, dirt in all the wrong places.
Yes. Oh. Well, no, that's the thing, Angelica. Is the next day, I went home and I was going in the shower and I pulled my trousers down. That's all these bloody leaves and crap. And I was just like, oh god, I don't know where he is now. I hope you're well.
I agree though about, it's just reminded me of, I think there's something romantic in theory about the sort of al fresco shag, isn't there? But it's kind of, then in practice it's really awkward. I remember being with somebody, I wasn't even dating for that long, at a festival. And we decided, oh, let's go off into that little sort of wooded area and we'll, go and kind of get it on. But I remember it was just so awkward. We're in all this uncomfortable sort of long grass. And then we realised that she had a slug crawling up her leg. And we were like, no, let's just leave this.
In theory, yeah, it is, getting hot and heavy, you know, in the wilderness.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a recipe for bloody disaster.
I had sex in a forest once in Israel, and I was just so scratched because we stood it up against a tree, and then it was just scratches everywhere. And it wasn't nice, the sand, it wasn't good.
Also, sorry, just to come back to losing your virginity, you sort of have this idea in your head, don't you, about losing your virginity?
That's going to be like passionate.
I've watched too many American teen films. But and then it happens in a rural field in Lincolnshire. It doesn't really sort of add up, does
it?
It
doesn't really have the romance. How do you think you can kind of create more romance? Like, when it comes to sex, what does good, like, romance look like? And intimacy, are we talking candles? Like, what makes good intimacy?
Candles is quite cliche.
It is. And also, I had a terrible house fire and started from a candle. So it's not a good move. For me. Don't try and seduce me with a candle. It's bad memories.
Bad memories. Trip down memory lane. I've heard it first. Rosie Wilby, no candles.
I do think, candles is a bit...
Yeah, that's a bit passé, isn't it, now?
What do you like when it comes to intimacy?
I think, honestly, when I wear matching lingerie, I feel like I've got my shit together. I feel like I'm on fire. Nothing can stop me. I feel honestly, unbeatable.
Yeah, well.
A matching set
and a good Spotify playlist.
It's got to be a good playlist. But the thing is, what if you don't agree on your Spotify playlist? In my Science of Sex show, I used to have a montage of good and bad sex music at the end. And people were always hotly debating this. And I had one lesbian couple come up to me and say, well, we just really don't agree on the same music. So we listen to separate iPods. And I thought, what?
That is weird.
In the same
that is
moment.
Top 10 weirdest things I've had in 2018. Honestly, that's really weird. You can't listen to separate music.
That's
like being at dinner together and listening to separate music.
Yeah, that's weird. I'm not into that.
I just put on Spotify Timeless Love Songs playlist. Because we're cringy. And I don't
care. That's kind of a bit cringy.
Bit 90s garage.
No, it's great. Bit of Beyonce, bit of Adele. Bit melancholy. Do you think you have to spend money to create, like, good intimacy?
No, I don't think so.
I think the cutest things are often more personal, and sometimes, it might be just something like, a cute pebble that was shaped like a love heart and that amazing day you spent at the beach, you know, that kind of thing.
Fish and chips, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not on a forest floor, though.
No, on a forest floor.
How do you think romance is different in same-sex relationships?
I think some things about romance are universal and the way that we fall in love, but I did notice some interesting patterns that I talk about a lot in the book about the way gay men and lesbians have very different types of relationships and different strategies around monogamy. A lot of my gay male friends tend to have open relationships, so kind of sexual partners outside of the primary partnership, and that works really well for them because gay men actually have the lowest divorce rate of everybody. So that to them is a romantic structure, you know, if you're letting your partner have some kind of freedom, that really works for tons and tons of gay men. Whereas lesbians tend to be more, well, if you like, kind of more love addicts rather than sex being the priority, and they tend to be the most serially monogamous group of all and sort of rotate partners periodically, but generally have more kind of amicable endings because it's quite a small community and you've got to stay friends with your ex because they're probably going to go out with someone you know really well, and oh, it's really complicated. So I did notice these different kind of patterns, I suppose. So I think for lesbians, there's almost a romance to kind of staying friends with your ex, and that can be problematic. There's endless kind of articles on lesbian magazine websites about, oh, my girlfriend is too close to her ex. And sometimes I think it can be a really healthy connection. But sometimes I think almost that's some of those enduring friendships I see between ex-partners almost strike me as the most romantic of all, because there's no sex, there's no kind of romantic relationship in a sense anymore, but those people have a history and still care for each other. But obviously you have to get your boundaries kind of sorted out with new partners, because
that's really interesting.
It's kind
though.
Of threatening. I can see how difficult and challenging negotiating that is.
Definitely. It's really interesting, because in hetero relationships, being friends with your ex is pretty much like a no-no, you know.
Is it a total no-no?
Well, not total, but I would definitely say there's a distance level.
I'm friends with none of my exes. Okay. I think they're an ex for a reason. Like, the good times finished. I don't know. Talk to her anymore.
But I think I found that I was friends with my ex until I got a new boyfriend. New boyfriends, I was like, no. There's maybe once a year dinner would be fine, but anything beyond that, I'm not sure. I really don't know.
Okay, that's interesting. But I think with lesbian relationships, there seems to be quite a kind of fast pace to which the kind of romantic part of the relationship, where you're having lots and lots of sex, actually kind of dies off. And there is actually, although it's a little bit cliche, there is actually a phrase, lesbian bed death, which was coined by a psychologist, well, many years ago now in the 80s, who was kind of investigating different relationship types. And she observed sex falling off more quickly in longer term lesbian partnerships. So I think a lot of lesbian relationships break down, even though the two people actually really get on and have tons of companionship and still, you know, have a really good partnership in many ways, but they're just not having sex. And I know that does happen in straight relationships and gay male relationships and all types of relationships of all genders, the combinations. But I think it does seem to have been a particular thing with lesbian couples, like they become too much like best mates.
Too much like friends, and the sex dies off.
Yeah.
Do you think that we need romance when it comes to sex? Like, I'm kind of thinking, like, specifically with one night stands, do you think it's important to have romance, or are you happy having sex that perhaps isn't particularly romantic and just like having sex?
I think romance and one night stands are a bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
I don't think you should go into a one night stand thinking it's going to be the most romantic encounter of your life. Or I'm having the wrong one night stands, maybe.
I think you're having the right one.
I love one. No,
surely the point of it is to be kind of free, and there's no commitment afterwards. I'm no good at doing it anymore. I did it when I was younger, but I must say I'm not really in that mindset anymore.
I'm interested in the concepts because I feel like there is such a stigma to a one night stand that it's you know, especially if a girl's going out and having a one night stand with a guy, and it's like, oh, that's, you know, people say that's slutty, whatever it is, that the words that we're
but
trying
then
to
the
reclaim.
Guy gets,
but the guy
a
gets
high five,
yeah,
okay,
pat on the back,
yeah.
You know,
but double standard.
I'm really interested in the idea of one night stands being like a positive thing. That if you're like, if you just want casual sex,
if you want casual sex and you're being safe and doing so, then totally do it. I think sex is about being empowered, and if a one night stand's going to make you feel empowered and you're happy to do that, then I don't think there's any problem with it.
I suppose the problems arise when you want something out of it, like romance or a relationship.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's with one night stands, if one person person's going in with it just purely seeing it as a sexual encounter, and then the other person maybe sees it as a, you know, kind of a shoe-in to a more romantic relationship, maybe, then it can get a bit, you know.
Yeah.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Confusing.
Confusing.
Have you had a one-night stand that you thought was going to be more?
Yeah. Yeah, I have, actually.
Really? And were you upset?
Well, I got over it. Because I think, you know, you're upset and then you kind of wait for a text and the text never comes. And then by next week, you'll be like, oh, you know what? That was fun while it lasted. and then you move on from it.
Do you think it's because everything's become a lot more disposable with Tinder and stuff
like
that?
I honestly think dating in London is horrendous. You know, I think with the rise of dating apps, everything, it's just like a conveyor belt, isn't it? You go on a date with someone and you're kind of feeling it, but not really. You know that by next week or even the next day you could go on a date with someone else. It's just this constant supply, yeah. Isn't it?
It's the paradox of choice. There's too
people
many
don't
choices.
Want to settle now.
Yeah
they just want to keep
you
going.
Oh, there must be somewhere a better one around the corner.
Yeah.
So it's the Love Island thing, like, I'm happy but I could be happier. That's the thought that's in everyone's heads.
But you probably couldn't, really.
Yeah.
Because nobody's perfect. We're all weird.
The grass is not always greener.
What's the worst Tinder date you've been on?
How long have you got?
I love that noise.
Was it the vegan guy?
Oh, God, I did have a bad date with the vegan. Not that I'm saying that vegans do bad dates. It was just really bad. I had a really bad meal, actually, with the guy as well. And I was just completely jet-lagged. Actually, this isn't bad, but you know when you're just there, you just literally want to go, and then you're no starter. I don't want a starter. Let's just go straight for the main. No, let's have dessert. No, I just want this main and then to leave. I've had quite a lot of bad dates.
with the vegan guy, you ran out of conversation. You end up asking what his favourite service station
was. Yeah, that was a bad one.
Oh, wow.
It's Fleet. Actually, it's Cambridge. That was bad.
Station.
But it's a great conversation starter. I think also, you know, not necessarily bad date, but so you've been chatting to someone online for, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, and you really get on in the sort of internet space, and then you see, you know, like, oh, meet outside so and so, and you clock them, and before, like, you've even spoken to them, you're just like, no.
Yeah, you're disappointed.
You're just like, no. And they've probably done it, and that's probably happened to me, but it's... And you're thinking to yourself, fuck, I've got to now go on this date with someone and I've got to be bright and be sparky. But deep down, you just know that it's not going to work.
But then also, conversely, you can have great sex with someone that you don't have good chat with. And, like, the two don't always marry up. Like, you can have a great date and bad sex. So it's...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
But always.
It's true. I once had a really kind of really sexy fling, many years ago now, with this woman who was, she was really awkward and really socially awkward and really bad at conversation. But I ended up back at hers and kind of, she ended up just kind of launching herself on me. And then surprisingly, the sex was really, really hot. But I was kind of really taken aback by that because it had been so socially awkward.
And you just don't really know.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you meet the one and then it's awful, you know?
But I don't think you could have a relationship with someone you couldn't talk to, could you?
No. We'd just have a sexual relationship.
Yeah, it would just be one level.
Just communicate by dance.
Yeah. I did once have an internet date with someone who brought along like a sort of panel of her exes. Like a sort of X Factor judging panel.
Here you go.
Yeah, that was very weird. I got out of that one fairly quickly.
Thank you so much for joining me today, guys. Very interesting chat about romance and intimacy and sex in the modern age. If people would like to find out more about you, where should they go?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Rosie Wilby. So that's one of the main places. Also Facebook, Rosie Wilby on there as well. And the book is available on Amazon and lots of places, Waterstones as well, Foyles, and lots of cool indie bookshops. If you like going into actual real bookshops, it's at some really cool shops in London like Gaze the Word and Bookseller Crow and Houseman's. So do check all of those out.
Fantastic. How about you, Alicia?
It's weird when you call me Alicia.
what do you normally call her?
Al. She calls me Al.
I try to be professional.
She's being professional. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm Alicia_Grimshaw, and I write for a lovely London lifestyle magazine called About Time Magazine, .co.uk. We need the hits.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
The Climax is brought to you in association with intimate brand Lilo. Swedish-born Lilo is one of the world's leading brands for designer-led intimate products. From high-quality pleasure objects to bedroom accessories, candles and condoms, they've got something for everyone. Lilo is a little like us, driven by an insatiable curiosity, a desire to explore and refine the boundaries between sex and the 21st century.
Lilo is all about the quality. A heritage brand based on craft, unexpected innovation and being entirely different from everything and anyone else. For more information and to explore your own sexual desire, visit www.lilo.com, and we're offering an exclusive discount for the Climax listeners. Use the code LILO4YOU to receive 20% off products. Thank you to our sponsors, Lilo. This part of the show, kindly sponsored by Lilo, is where we explore different sex toys every week, and Rebecca and I try out different products and we talk about them and we let you guys know how we got on with them.
So, Jelly, what did you try this week?
This week I tried the Tiani 2, which is it's an unusual sex toy and not something I've tried before. It's basically a small kind of silicone shape which you wear internally during sex. So the idea is you put the toy in and then you have sex with your partner and it vibrates, and it has a separate couples massager where your partner can control the speed and the tempo of the toy, and you wear it internally. You can also wear it for like solo play, but they say it's more designed for couples together.
And what did you think of it?
Like I said, it was an unusual toy. I don't think it's a toy that's for everyone, but I think that it can really like add to your sex life, and it is quite fun, especially if you're looking to like spice things up like we talked about in the first episode, and perhaps your sex has become a little bit like routine. It's an interesting toy to play with. It's quite discreet. You put it in and then you can have sex with your partner, and both you and your partner can feel the vibrations of it. It's also good that it's customizable, so you can change up the intensity. I think that's probably the funnest part about the toy, is that it's fun that your partner controls it. Usually with sex toys you're in control, but it's fun that your partner can hold it and he can play around with it. I think it's a great toy if you're kind of intimidated by using them, because it is quite discreet and it's quite light. It's quite a good like entry level toy for playing around with. What I also quite liked about it is that it has 8 different modes. So for a relatively expensive toy, it's £119. For a relatively expensive toy, you get quite a lot out of it with 8 different modes. You can change it up quite a lot, and it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't get bored with. And also, because it's something that you wear internally, it kind of works with every position, so you can adapt your sex life around it rather than just being like a vibrator or something like that, where you can only use it in one position, really. So in that way, it's quite versatile. It's also waterproof, so you can like use it in the shower, you can use it in the bath, which is quite fun. And it's also just discreet, so it's a good one for travel, because it's quite a small toy and it's the kind of thing you could put in like hand luggage and no one would see. And also, like all Lilo products, it's the same charger for all of them, so you just have this one charger that works for all their toys, which is great.
And if somebody wanted to buy it, where could they get it from?
So if you'd like to purchase the Tiani 2, it's available from lilo.com, and it's £101.15, and we also have a special 20% off code for our listeners. The code is LILO4YOU, and that will get you 20% off anything from lilo.com. So Bex, what did you try this week?
So what I tried this week was the Aura from Lilo, and also the Lilo massage candle.
What do you think about the products?
The Aura is such an interesting sex toy. So it's sort of designed to mimic the feeling of oral sex. So it has it's quite hard to explain. Basically, it's sort of circular, it's circle shaped, and you put it against your clitoris, and it sort of has this internal, like, almost like a bead underneath the toy that goes round and round, and it sort of circles your clitoris, and it also has a vibration function. I mean, like, it sounds very technical and not very sexy, but it feels amazing. And again, I'm a huge fan of this idea that if you're using sex toys regularly, you do yourself a massive favor by using sort of different sensations. Because if you're constantly using the same thing, then it becomes very difficult to orgasm from something different. So by doing this, again, you're sort of varying what you can orgasm from. I tried the massage candle as well, which is, it looks like a standard candle. But you burn it and it has a very, very low melting point. So the wax turns into a sort of like massage oil.
Who do you think these products are good for?
I think this would be a great toy for all sorts of different people. If you're a couple, you could use it during sex. You probably need to be in sort of doggy style or something like that, because you need very free and clear access to your clitoris, because it's quite, it's not big, but it's not tiny enough to fit between you. It's probably more of a masturbatory toy. It's really great for either somebody who has had quite a lot of toys and, you know, wants something new and exciting to experiment with. Or alternatively, it would be good for somebody who maybe doesn't necessarily enjoy the classic vibrator. I think a lot of people would give up on masturbation because they don't enjoy the sort of standard feeling of quite a buzzy toy. But actually, there are so many different things you can use. I think that a really easy place to start if you want to improve your intimacy with a partner, or you want to kind of just bring a little bit of excitement into the bedroom, is a massage candle. It's such an easy, brilliant way to do it. And all you do is you light it, you burn it for a bit, probably about 45 minutes is ideal, but 15 minutes would do it if you needed it to. And you pour the hot wax, and it's really, really not very hot. Like, I promise you it doesn't hurt. On your partner's skin, you spread it around, maybe you massage them. You kind of use it to really feel and enjoy their body. It's a very easy thing to use, particularly if you're not super kinky and you don't want to be, you know, swinging from the chandeliers. It's very simple, very classic, and really, really incredibly enjoyable. The scent is great. It also leaves your skin really moisturized. It's the perfect place to start if you'd like to experiment a bit more, but you're not feeling, you know, like you want to go super, super hardcore.
And if you want to buy them, where are they available from?
The Aura is available from Lilo. And you can go on the website and you can use our discount code, Lilo for you, to get 10% off. And yeah, it's the Lilo massage candle. It's easily available on the website, and it's also available with our Lilo user discount.
Well, this part of the show is called Ask Me Anything, where we get some random guys off the street to come and talk to us and ask them questions that you've always wanted to ask someone. So we put it out on social and I get lots of DMs from people asking questions, which we're now going to ask you. So today we're joined by Jack.
I'm Jack. Hello.
And Simon.
Hi there.
Thank you for joining us. And Alicia is with us.
Just thought I'd stay.
Thought we'd hang around. So, Simon, starting with you, I'd want to know, what is the most romantic thing you've ever done for a girl?
I think pretty much the most romantic thing I've done for a girl was a few years ago on Valentine's Day. I was in quite an early part of my relationship. And it was probably the first major Valentine's Day. Well, I think it was probably actually the first Valentine's Day that we'd had together. We were both still living at our parents' house, but my girlfriend had a free house, and I went over, cooked the whole dinner. We had this beautiful dinner with wine. I made a really nice risotto, or hot ottolenghi recipe and everything. And then after dinner, just as we were thinking about going to bed and all that stuff, I told her to pack a bag and got a surprise hotel room in Shoreditch. And we spent the night there, and it was beautiful.
Listen, how do you rate that for romance?
That is very romantic.
Would you be impressed if a guy did that for you?
Yeah, I think that's nice.
I have to say, I'm very impressed.
I mean, for me, it'd probably be a travel lodge.
I mean, I didn't say
there's nothing wrong with a travel lodge.
Yeah, I'm more of a Premier Inn nowadays.
Jack, what's the most romantic thing you've done for a girl?
So I can't really think of any specific really romantic moment, but I was in a long-distance relationship, and I used to send flowers in the periods where we didn't see each other quite as much. So we're seeing each other about every 3 to 4 weeks, and if it was any longer than that, I'd make sure to send like flowers in the middle of that period.
Oh, that's nice.
And then I would always pick her up from the airport when she came to visit as well.
Oh, that's funny, because we were just talking in the last segment about how Alicia's kind of dream romance is that someone's there at the airport for her when she walks out.
Yeah.
With some flowers.
Wow. There you go. My mum's done it to me once. With a nice
Your mum's
guard
very
bond.
Romantic.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, in a nice way, not in a romantic way. What? Okay. What's the least romantic sex you've ever had?
Is it a one-night stand?
You can be honest. We can share.
I've had a very odd romantic sex before.
Go on, share with us.
One specific moment was about 3 a.m. driving home, stopping on a quiet street, and then having sex on the bonnet of my car.
Wow. Was it during summer?
Yeah, it was summer.
I was just thinking, frostbite.
Yeah.
Was it not romantic?
I don't think having sex in the middle of the street is very romantic, to be honest.
Al fresco.
Simon, have you ever had a very unromantic encounter?
I would say that the one that sticks in my mind is one that started off quite passionate and then by the end was not very romantic at all, which was on holiday with a group of friends. We were in Croatia in Hvar, and there was like a day party, and there was a girl that I got to know, and we ended up at the end of the party going and having sex on lounges on the beach. And then at the end, I just realized she was on her period, and it wasn't a pretty sight.
Oh, no.
So that ended up being not very romantic.
On that topic, a question that I have been asked a lot by people is, do guys mind about having sex on a girl's period? Jack, how do you feel about it?
I don't really mind that much, to be honest, but I think if you're going to do it, just don't do it in bed, like do it in the shower or something.
Also, I suppose know about it.
About it is a big one.
It sounds like with your lounger story, the problem was that it was a shock. You don't want to have that as a surprise.
And also,
yeah, but it's also happened to me before that, like, midway, they're like, oh, I'm getting my period.
So,
and
then
that's like my worst nightmare.
It slightly depends on the timing as well. Like, at the end of a period, it can be different.
At the end of a period, it's like you're not even on a period.
Alicia, how do you feel about sex on your period?
Great.
You love it?
Yeah. I mean, also, it feels better anyway because you're more sensitive.
Yeah, aren't girls also kind of more aroused during that period?
Yeah.
I think that's a lie.
I mean, not aroused because sometimes you just want to eat chocolate and, you know, be woomy.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I'm not against it.
So this week's show is about romance and intimacy. Do you think that we have lost the art of romance, like, in the modern age? We've been talking a lot on the show about sort of Tinder and terrible Tinder dates that Alicia's been on. Do you think it's hard to keep, like, create romance in the millennial age?
I don't think so. I think that the obvious thing to say is that apps, you know, make everything much more disposable. And that they
you took the words right out of my mouth.
However, apps are only a means of getting to know someone. I don't think that there has to be the death of romance after you met someone. So whether you meet somebody on the street in everyday life or on an app, I think romance is romance. And if you're a romantic person, then, you know, life throws plenty of opportunities at you to be romantic. I don't know that... perhaps we have to make a slightly bigger effort given how easy it is to meet people and also just to never talk to people again. But no, I definitely don't think it's dead.
I suppose it might be the caliber of people that you're meeting on an app, perhaps... Just think it's on the experiences that Lucy's had aren't the kind of people that are looking for, like, a romantic relationship.
I also think that maybe... I think romance isn't dead, but I don't think it's the same that it maybe was, like, 30, 40 years ago.
Joe does make a good point.
And thank you, Alicia. And one of the reasons is that I think chivalry is on the wane. And
would you say chivalry is dead?
I don't know if it's dead. I think it's on the way. I think there are certain people, I like to think I'm one of them, that try to remain chivalrous, like opening doors first and just little things like that.
You do have to be more courageous to be chivalrous.
Yeah. And you have to do things that are considered kind of against the grain and a bit old-fashioned to be chivalrous.
But I also
think... paying on the first date.
Yeah, I think a lot of girls...
opening doors,
especially in given everything that's going on, people kind of find it refreshing almost
to be chivalrous
a lot. I think a lot of guys like find it a bit embarrassing to like go and buy flowers for a girl they're dating, and that shouldn't be like something that's considered cheesy.
I think also, like, with the right kind of rise of feminism, there is more of a thing now that, like, chivalry isn't necessary, and in some cases can be a bit offensive. That girls don't want to be treated in that way, and they, as you said about taking a girl out for dinner, like, would you find it romantic if a girl offered to pay or, like, took you out for dinner on, like, an early date?
I think if a girl took me out for dinner on an early date, it'd be lovely. I think I kind of separate paying slightly. I think paying is just a different thing. Some men prefer to pay. Some people prefer to split. Like, I think that's a separate thing. But taking, you know, if a girl wants to take a guy out for dinner or, you know, yeah, why not?
Mm. Do you like to be taken out for dinner by someone?
I think it's a nice gesture. It's something that I never really thought about, because I always, when I was younger, it would always just be like 50-50 splits, or I pay one, my girlfriend pay the other. And then more recently I experienced the other side of it, where I was always expected to pay. And then the times where this was in a specific relationship, and the times where then she would offer to pay for dinner, it would be like a nice gesture. But I think generally, living in this day and age, it should be more or less equal, with a bit more onus on the guy to make the effort on certain occasions. But I think it is the 21st century, so I think it's a bit archaic for the guy to always pay for stuff.
Mm. I think a woman has to show willing to pay.
Yeah. But honestly, like, for you, would it be, if a guy didn't offer to pay on a first date, would it be a bit of a no-no?
No, I don't think you should rule someone out for not paying on the first date. I think I always, when I go on a date, I always agree to pay half. Or instead of you meeting a bar, they get around, I get around, they get around.
Didn't you go on a date once where the guy was like, "Oh, drinks are a bit expensive here"?
Yeah, I did actually.
That was a turn off.
Yeah, did he like drop a hint?
That was a bad thing. Yeah. That was bad. Yeah. But if you go on you're dating someone, and this is maybe the second date, and the guy said, "I want to take you out for dinner." If a guy says, "I want to take you out for dinner," to me, that strikes them as saying, "This is my treat, I'm going to pay."
Mm.
So that happened to me. A guy was like, "I'm going to take you out for dinner." I was like, "Great." And we went out for dinner, and then we got the bill, and he's like, "We're going Dutch." And I was like, "Oh, okay." But in that situation, you can't really go, "Well, actually."
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. It's how you phrase it if you.
Yeah, because I thought he was taking me out for dinner.
Mm.
And
then the romance was dead.
And then
I know what I mean.
So that was a first date.
So we went for drinks on the first date.
Yeah.
And then it was like the round, and then he said, "I'd love to take you out for dinner on the second date," and I was like, "Great."
And then he went Dutch.
Yeah,
that's rude.
I mean,
I think even if as a guy you're prepared to pay for the first date, and I actually think it's nice to pay. I think it's nice for the guys to pay on dates in general, you know, where possible. Whatever. I think there's something quite nice in it, but it's always nice for the girl to offer.
But that's
to offer, and then it's okay to turn it down and be like, "No, I've got this." But it's in a weird way, from a guy's point of view, it's almost. Perhaps it's a slightly superficial way of judging it, but it's almost a mark of, like, decency. So that was really nice of her. She offered to pay. She's not here to, like, freeload or whatever. I find that's quite nice.
But I have been on dates where I'll get the next round, and they've actually been quite surprised that I've even thought about...
Even suggested it.
Yeah, but I like that, you know?
On the topic of intimacy during sex... to what extent is it a big deal for you if a girl doesn't have an orgasm during sex?
I think it is a big deal. I think sex is always better when both sides are enjoying it and both sides orgasm. And I think, I think it's definitely in the long run. If you're having sex where only one side is getting that level of pleasure, then there's only a limit to how good sex it can be.
Mm. Well, yeah.
Jack.
What are you, Jack?
Agreed.
Manifold
very
words.
Simply, yeah.
Do you think it's a hard conversation to have, though? Like, if a girl hasn't had an orgasm, like, how do you broach it?
It's much easier for guys to orgasm. But I think I enjoy giving a girl pleasure. So that's also part of it for me.
Mm.
So to know that she's orgasmed and enjoyed herself, that's great.
Mm.
And obviously, the longer you are with someone, the more time you get to know them and the easier it becomes. I think you can't always expect to make the girl orgasm, but it should be something that you're trying to do.
This is a big deal for you.
Yeah, massively.
Like, would you say something?
Do you know, I was dating this guy, and I think you've got to take some time into foreplay. You know, it's all, you know, people rush foreplay. You don't rush foreplay.
Mm.
It's like saying you don't want a starter. of him. It's yeah. not, but so he would. I think it was canapé, I don't know. And a muse boosh. Like, you know, you want to be a muse. Your boosh wants to be a muse. But he went from kissing to like straight sex within minutes, and it wasn't, it felt.
I think the foreplay thing is like super, super important for both, but particularly for women, because I get the feeling that for men to orgasm, you basically have to be stimulated and aroused. And to be honest, like, men can orgasm in a huge range of different, like, sexual experiences. Whereas I think for women, it's much more about, like, mood, being in the moment, feeling calm, like, feeling part of the thing. And, like, foreplay is a huge part of getting you to that mental state.
Yeah.
So that when you're having sex, like, actually you can feel all the pleasures that get you to orgasm.
Yeah.
You know, 0 to 100 for men can be, you know, a much more simple, quick, direct route than it can be for women.
Yeah, like, women need to be warmed up, and like that process of like relaxing into it and everything like that. Do you think that sex toys can kill the romance?
I've never used sex toys.
Never?
So, no, never.
Really?
Would you be open to it though?
I don't see the need for them. But yeah, if you know, someone wanted to try it, I'd try it.
I'm interested that you've never tried them, as a girl never like suggested that she wanted to bring one into the bedroom.
No.
Really?
They've got a whole life size one.
What do you mean by sex toys? You mean like dildos?
So like vibrators, dildos, like anything of that kind.
Yeah, no, nothing like that.
Interesting.
I think in some ways it can spice up sex, but I think it's interesting what Jack was saying, because I think as men, I share this as well, there's an apprehension that basically, whether implicitly or explicitly, the involvement of a sex toy can cause the man to question whether he is sufficient.
Mm.
And actually, I think sometimes it's just like it's an addition, or it's something different, or it's almost like the sensation of changing positions can create different feelings during sex, so too can the addition of a sex toy. But I think actually, for, you know, if we talk about like sex in the 21st century and female empowerment and the use of all sorts of toys and extra things, I think one of the challenges is, how do you make men not feel like this is in some way replacing some of their kind of like roles?
Yeah, feeling intimidated by it, emasculated maybe a little bit. Have you used sex toys in like sex with someone?
No, it would go horribly wrong. I wouldn't trust myself. I've used sex toys on myself and I think they're bloody great, aren't they? My legs fly off.
Especially when you're taking that Tinder break.
Yeah.
That long 6 months.
Angelica, are you just dishing out my secrets?
Tinder shaming you. Thank you so much to our wonderful guests, Jack and Simon. Thank you, guys.
Thanks
for joining us.
Angelica's the only one clapping. I feel bad.
If you've enjoyed this show, you can find out more by following us at Jelly Malin and at Rebecca CN Reed on Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review so more people can find the show. There'll be a new episode out every Monday. Thank you, guys.
This has been a Candy Store production, hosted by Angelica Malin and Rebecca Reed, produced by Van Connor. Sex with OS by Mobile Steam Unit appears under Creative Commons 3.0. Visit Candy Store Productions at candystoreproductions.co.uk.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more. Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.